Hey everyone, welcome back to Buzzworthy. I'm your host, Schleicy Harris. I dive into the rare stories entrepreneurs tell about building their businesses, but most importantly, themselves. Let's get into it. Hey everyone, welcome back to Buzzworthy. I'm your host, Schleicy Harris. And today in the studio, we have Matthew Milne, who is the co-founder of Tooks from the Heart. And I love this story because it started way longer and way before this even actually became a real business. So Matthew, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited just to talk about business, share stories, and just let everyone know a little bit about how we started and a little bit more about Tooks from the Heart.
I really love your story for a lot of reasons. And it's reminiscent of, I think, another guest, which I love. And it's so relatable in so many ways. But before we jump into what that actually means, what do you think set you up to be an entrepreneur?
So my entire childhood, I think, would be described by three different things. Being interested in watching Dragon's Den, animals, and cooking. And if I was doing one of the three things, then you know I was doing the right thing. I was in the right place. So whenever I was consuming any kind of media, it was usually going to be like whatever was on TV at the time, whatever my parents were watching. Mm-hmm. But if I had the choice myself, I would either be watching Dragon's Den or Chopped. If I don't know if you ever see the Food Network channel. I love that show. So, and when I was watching Dragon's Den, even at a young age, like six or seven, five, like whatever I was at the time, I was so enthralled by the stories. I was enthralled by the rawness of people coming out there with their heart on their sleeve, talking about their passions and trying to share their business with people who are judging them and also giving them the opportunity to maybe get investment and grow their business. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what the percentage meant at the time or the capital that they were trying to invest. I had no idea what the numbers meant. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was super cool seeing all the new businesses that were being pitched. And that was definitely an inspiration for kind of like leading my brain down to the path I am on today.
Yeah. And you were, you know, when kind of the very early days before Tooks in the Heart even, you know, came into, you know, your mind of any sort, you were around the age of 12, right? Tell us that story and that really early day of Tooks from the Heart. That's what I want to call it. Is that right?
That's perfect. When I was 12, I played a lot of hockey growing up, and I had this idea to throw a hockey sock on my head, and this ended up being the inspiration for the entire business. But when I was a kid, I just thought it was a cool thing just to do and wear in the wintertime, and I talked to my mom, who's an excellent seamstress. She makes a lot of her own clothes and everything like that, and I asked her, could you turn this hockey sock into a toque? And she, with a couple snips and a couple sewing maneuvers, made it happen. And I wore that toque proudly to the rink, walked around with it. My friends were asking, like, where'd you get that from? And I just thought it was a super cool way to just wear my team colors in a slightly different way in a very unique, very Canadian hockey-based kind of fashion sense as well. I brought a couple of the earlier samples that we made when we were first starting the business. If you want me to, I can show them off a little bit to the camera.
Yeah, we'll definitely show them off because I love I love to see the progress of things. I think it's important for like even our guests and our listeners to at least hear and see the progress of it, because we are available on YouTube if you want to see the very early stages of Tooks from the Heart. Because I think a lot of people who want to be entrepreneurs are scared to start with the very basic, very rough, very sometimes ugly. I haven't seen your first product.
There's some Frankenstein kind of designs we had in the past for sure.
Yeah. But like those are the days that make you feel like, oh my God, I'm about to create something. Yeah. So like show us. Yeah. Let's see.
So for anybody who didn't grow up playing hockey,
Actually, one second. Yeah. I just realized, so we have listeners in, I think, over 87 countries the last time I checked. And I think toque is a very Canadian word.
Very much so.
So let's rewind a little bit. And what is a toque?
So a toque, better known as a beanie if you're from the States, it's just a warm winter hat. And sometimes it has a pom-pom on the top. Sometimes it doesn't. Basically, it's a nice warm winter hat that keeps you warm all winter long. And in Canada, we need them to just survive out on, if you're going out in any kind of capacity in the wintertime. Yeah. So that's probably the easiest way to describe it. But it's so funny, the different pronunciations of toque and beanie and that whole bit of the media side is so funny. We wrote a blog about it one time that ended up being our most popular one that people visited, because mm-hmm. they were searching up what is a toque versus beanie, all that stuff. So it's definitely a contentious conversation that when we first got started, it was like we didn't know it was going to be like a rabbit hole we were diving down into.
Yeah, I actually didn't even know how to spell toque.
Well, here's the thing. There's multiple different ways to spell it,
is
too.
Is there? Okay.
So it's you can do T-U-Q-U-E, mm-hmm. T-O-Q-U-E, or T-O-U-Q-U-E. And it depends, like, if you're more Quebecois, they'll throw some U's in there. Oh. Or, at least a week, we're going back and forth, like,
which version
one do we go with? And I was like, this one sounds the most correct, in our opinion. And it was... Yeah. Less letters, so mm-hmm. it was gonna be less typing for us in the long term. We didn't think about that maybe at that time, but it was the one that stuck, and I'm glad we went that route, because I'm pretty sure it's the most generally accepted version of the word toque.
Okay, because I was texting, or I was making notes in my phone or something like that about it, and it kept highlighting the word, and I was just like, I don't know how to spell this. Yeah. Just like even for myself, when we first came to Canada, actually almost 20 years ago, and we were hearing the word toque, it was like, what is that?
Yeah.
And we would just like pretend that we knew what it was, but we had no idea. And then eventually somebody just showed us what a toque was. And that's how we found out, like, this is what this word means. Mm-hmm. Do you know what it means? Like, do you know where the word toque came from?
I've never looked up the origin, so that's definitely something maybe to look into, maybe to have a little definition thing on our website. That'd be interesting.
That would be interesting. Let's Google. Let's ask our little, or should we AI this one? Okay, so the origin of toque as a knitted cap is a French-Canadian evolving from French word toque, which may have roots in the Spanish words toca, headdress, mm-hmm. is what that means, or betron toque, which is hat. So who knew?
That's good to know. Yeah.
Who knew?
Now if somebody asks me that, I'll have an answer in mind. No one's ever dove into the origins of toque maybe as much as you have, but it's nice to think about, because like the word, like if you have any kind of thing associated with your business, like there's probably some buzzwords that just have absolutely no meaning to you now, because you've heard them and wrote them and explained it so many times that probably the amount of times I've written or typed or spoke the word toque is probably more than anybody should in their life. it comes with the business.
It comes with the business. So take us through the early days of Toques from the Heart, the first versions your mom made for you.
Yeah. So if you're not familiar with hockey, one of the core pieces of equipment is the outside to keep you warm while you're on the ice and keep you safe. And one of those things is a hockey sock. So for the people listening, it's about 3 feet long, double knitted, and it goes over your shin pad to keep you protected from pucks. And you get two of these minimum every single year when you play hockey. And after years and years of accumulating them, you just end up with a bunch of hockey socks in your basement with nothing to do with them. So we had the idea back then of just transforming some of these things that we had laying around at home into some wearable items. And I used to just throw this sock on my head as it was, just to stay warm and something to wear.
Yeah.
But after asking my mom, like I mentioned, who was an amazing seamstress, she made this for me, which is the original hockey sock too. This is the one I was wearing when I was 12 years old. So it's seen better days, because I wore it quite a bit back in the day.
Yeah. But
as you can see, it's just the hockey sock toque by itself, sewn up at the end, and then finished at the bottom, and that's it. You just roll it up like a normal cuff, like you would a toque, and you can throw it on, and that's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is so, you know, creative for just a 12-year-old to do. And, you know, like kids do like darn things sometimes. Yeah. Like that's amazing that was just like a thing you did, and now you have a business out of it years later.
Yeah, it was definitely a weird idea to have. But if you'd ask my parents, like, I was always just come up with the wildest stuff. And yeah, this was just the one thing that kind of stuck a little bit, that even to, like, at that time, I thought it was just like a cool idea to hold on to. And it, mm-hmm, it kept me warm during the winters at the time. So I was happy to wear it with pride, especially knowing mom made it, you know, that helped a little bit more as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I love that your mom, you know, even came into it with you and just like, I'll support you and make this thing, you know. It probably even just made sense to her. Maybe she had never even thought of it herself either.
Yeah. And she's like, since day one, she was always like our number one supporter. Like, we couldn't have done any bits of these, the Socky Sock transformation or making the business or doing the donations that we did without her. And I was just so happy that she was part of our team. So it was amazing.
Mom's rock.
They rock. Yeah.
So, you know, that was you at 12 year old wearing this hockey sock on your head.
Yeah.
How did that eventually evolve into the inception of a business?
Yeah, so I held on to the idea for a while, not knowing like what to do with it. I had it as my personal things that I would wear, but I didn't really do much else besides that. And it wasn't until the 12th grade, during an entrepreneurship class I was taking in high school, where we had a project to come up with a business idea and do a pitch in front of the class. And I racked my brain trying to think of something to do. And I looked at my closet and saw the hockey sock toque just sitting there. And I was like, this could be a little bit of something. So I spent a little bit of time pitching it and putting together just a rough idea of what to do. And at the time, it was to have people mail their socks to me or have friends in my class. I'd pick them up, bring them to my mom. She would transform them. And then we'd ship them back to them, or I'd drop them off and they would pay whatever certain fee there. I think I had like, it was like $10 at the time, something like that.
Yeah.
And I reconnected with an old friend who was dotting around Canada. He was in the reserves for the army, and I haven't seen him in about 7 years, and we were catching up just a couple weeks ago, and we were just chatting about business and stuff, and he was like, I remember that you telling me about this hockey sock toque idea back then, and it reminded me just kind of how far back it really went to that origin. And I think he was in my class at the time, so I think he probably listened to the presentation and thought, like, hockey socks on your head, that's a little interesting, but you know, you never know where you can go from there. So yeah, so that was like the first bit of that idea kind of transitioning to be a full-fledged business.
Yeah. And so was it in that high school class that you eventually found your co-founders?
No, that didn't happen until university. So okay. I didn't do anything with the idea from high school until then. Mm-hmm. But it took a couple conversations and us kind of learning things about the city that we were living in and to kind of put those two things together and make a real business.
Yeah. So choosing co-founders is one of the hardest thing any, you know, business owner can really do. It's, you know, some people say it's harder than, you know, getting married.
Yeah.
Like, because there's so much commitment, mm-hmm, in so many different ways.
Yeah.
How did you decide that your two co-founders were going to be a great fit for you in building this business together?
Yeah, well, first, like, you always have to find somebody you can work with. And, like, I met them through school, so we were in projects together, working together and hanging out. So I knew I would get along with them. And then you kind of come to realize each other's strengths and what everyone kind of brings to the table. And that was the transition. Like, you want to find somebody that you can work well with. That's priority number one. But for long-term success, you need people who you can also work and collaborate with and who are going to support each other's strengths and each other's weaknesses. So that was like the reason why it's working out now, is because we're kind of really found that working relationship that gels, mm-hmm, and we're supporting each other where some people may lack and where some people really exceed in other parts of the business.
Yeah. So your co-founders, if you can tell me the story of the three of you sort of coming together.
Yeah.
I think it'd be good for the audience to understand that, because I struggled to find a co-founder in my business. I never eventually ended up with one that stayed with me long-term enough to really build together.
Yeah.
So I understand the struggle of that. And so I'd love to like hear how, you know, three people can love an idea so much that they commit to starting a business together.
Yeah, so I'll reel it back a little bit to just the inception of this business and how that kind of came to be. So we were playing hockey downtown at a Cops Coliseum right across the street from the Salvation Army Booth Center. It's a shelter downtown in Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And we saw just right in front of our eyes like the true issues of homelessness in our city. We knew, like when we were going to the rink, we were wearing toques and we had our nice winter jackets on, and we made sure we were bundled up and warm. But right across the street from us were people who were out waiting for somebody to help serve them, or just out in the cold, and they didn't have the proper winter gear. A lot of them didn't have toques, didn't have mittens, all those little things. And that was like the kind of wake up moment that kind of drove us to think, like, can we do something to help these people? Mm-hmm. And while talking with my co-founders, we were trying to find out something that we could do to help these individuals. And along with that, trying to come up with a business that made sense. And that's when I told my friends at the time, Matt and Casey, about the hockey sock toque idea I had when I was a kid. And they thought it was a little bit nuts at first, but then when they started thinking about it a little bit more, they're like, this actually makes a lot of sense. We didn't have any money to start up the business. We didn't have any experience with manufacturing or anything. So repurposing and upcycling these hockey socks was a perfect way for us to sell some stuff to people, as well as be able to just make just nice warm items to give away to people we saw in our community.
Mm-hmm. I love that, because it's really solving a problem that was in front of you. And you obviously hated seeing that. And to come up with a business to help serve a community like that, but also serve others that just want a good sock. And, you know, I think upcycling is such a huge thing right now, because there's so many things that are made of quality that, you know, don't necessarily get a second life. And that's ultimately what you're doing with these toques.
Yeah, and it was the perfect way for us to kind of just get off the ground and do something when we had, like I said, no resources. Like, we talked to friends and family, because I knew personally I had probably 20 pairs of hockey socks in my basement. So did my co-founder, Matt. So did my friend, Noah. So did all my cousins. Like, you know what I mean? Like, everybody just had this kind of shared experience of just having this stuff sitting on their house. They didn't know what to do with it. And we kind of provided an avenue to not only take them off their hands and give it a better home, but then also be able to give back and help somebody stay warm in the wintertime.
Yeah. And when you first started, were you only serving sort of like the homeless population, or were you serving everyone?
So we didn't discriminate or didn't ask if anybody needed, or where they were coming from, what they were doing. We just knew if we were walking past somebody on the street, if they didn't have the proper item, we would just ask, hey, do you want a toque? And we would give them away. And that's, we did all of our stuff just one at a time in person when we were first starting. And we kind of found our focus on the issues of homelessness later on, because we were able to partner up with a lot of local Hamilton shelters and nonprofits like the Booth Center that kind of inspired the whole thing, and give the toques directly to them. And they were able to distribute it to whoever came through their systems that just needed a nice warm item in the wintertime.
Yeah. So this is quite fascinating to me, because I love when entrepreneurs are starting out with like little resources, because the level of creativity that has to come out of you to make this vision that you have come to life is amazing. And one of the first things when starting a business, you need your raw product.
Yeah.
And you were getting yours for free.
Yeah. Yeah. It helped out a lot. That's for sure.
So you initially your product costs like $0 to like actually find it. But then your mom then took everything and started, you know, actually making them. Well, what did she think when you brought like 60 plus hockey socks and like, mom, make me some hats?
Well, it kind of became a little bit of a joke at a time, because like she was like we were trying to keep up with our demand and keep up with what we knew we could produce. And like, I know at times we were asking a lot from her. And then when we were in the middle of doing all this stuff, we'd get a knock on her door and it'd be somebody we connected with via email that was dropping off another bag. And sooner enough, my basement and my friends' houses and all like the spaces that we had were just full of these socks that we were getting in. She thought every time we would bring another bag in that it was like she knew it was part of the operation to end up transforming them one day. So yeah, she was definitely like the biggest trooper when it came to just working, because she wanted to see us succeed, and she found a lot of fulfillment doing what she was doing there.
Yeah.
And like putting her sewing skills, like her years of just making stuff and being creative in that sense to allow us to run our business and be able to give away the stuff we were donating. It was definitely a lot to ask, but then she definitely found a lot of fulfillment and happiness from knowing what she was doing. It's going to a good cause.
Mm-hmm. And when did you realize maybe we should start charging for this?
Well, it was in our second year. Like the first year, we were just kind of scrambled all over the place. We would make some, sell some to people, and then also give away whatever we were just kind of making at the time. But to make it a real business, we looked to like other companies for inspiration that were kind of in the same vein. And we landed on the buy one, give one model. Mm-hmm. And that was the way we were able to sustain our business and be able to grow and ultimately help more people.
Yeah.
We ended up like purchasing little orders at a time with a local manufacturer in Toronto who was able to make hockey sock style toques because he was in the hockey sock business. Mm. And we were able to sell little batches at a time on our website. And then every time we'd run out, we'd do a donation, go pick up some more, and just continue the cycle until the end of winter was over that year.
Yeah. And what is it like running a seasonal business like this? Because it's obviously winter's almost, you know, almost a good 4 to 6 months here. It's cold. Like you can wear a toque for almost about 6 months out of the year. What's that like running a business like that?
It's definitely stressful. And in that off time, you're really trying to find ways to ramp things up and to innovate and find new ways to improve the business. But then you get into the thick of it and you're in the middle of the year and you're driving over here to do a donation, sorting out business operations on the back end while all trying to like handle everything at once. And it definitely gets really hectic and you don't have that like nice balance throughout the year. But that's something we're actually looking into going forward, is to grow the business into some more spring, summer, and year-round items, so we don't have that just crazy influx for the short period of time in the year, and then are just kind of planning and finding out new ways to innovate in the rest, so we can have like just year-round impact and everything like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, your whole thing is upcycling. Mm-hmm. Is that where you're sort of staying in that space, like? Mm-hmm. What other products we can upcycle at different parts of the year that, you know, maybe today we're just taking for granted.
Mm-hmm. Well, the hockey sock toque innovation side of it, we had to slowly move away and transition away from that in our third year business, because it was no longer sustainable in terms of just business practice to keep up with the donations. Like, especially even if it wasn't just my mom, we would have had to hire like fleets of teams to make and upcycle the toques. And we found that a lot of our clients that we were working with and people we were giving the toques to, they just wanted a brand new item. They didn't like, when we were upcycling them, they didn't take that part of it into consideration. They were just like, oh, I got a brand new toque. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And when we thought about that, we were just on the side of like, let's grow this and help as many people stay warm as possible. So we transitioned into just purchasing all brand new items for whatever we were donating at the time.
Yeah.
But we still kind of keep a little bit of that original business idea within what we're selling now. We have our the hockey sock style toques are still on our website. We still sell them because it's a cool story and part of our origin.
Yeah.
And we also sell a sustainable toque that's made out of 100% recycled fiber. So if anybody wants to support a homeless initiative as well as care about the impacts on the environment, we have items for them as well.
Yeah, amazing. Mm. It's so incredible that, you know, ideas can stay with us for such a long time and eventually come to fruition, even when we have no plans to really do anything with it. What has been your biggest learning about yourself in sort of bringing an idea to life?
I think it's just that is you never know what crazy idea you come up with in the shower or you're just dreaming up when you're a kid. You never know where those things might take you one day. So just kind of holding on to them and keeping a mental note of all those little things you might have like dreamt up or thought of when you're younger or as you're mm-hmm. transitioning in life, because you just never know when it could come in handy. So then that's exactly what happened to us. Like, we were scrambling to find a business idea that could help serve the communities that we wanted to help. And because I never forgot about that little childhood dream and this tiny toque that kept me warm when I was a kid, I'm now, me and my partner are now donating thousands of items every single year because I never forgot that little dream I had when I was a kid. Yeah. So yeah, just hold on to everything. Like, if you're a hoarder, maybe that's not the best idea. But in terms of ideas, find a great way to keep an eye on them, because you never know when they can come in handy.
Yeah. What do you think your 12-year-old self would think of you today?
I think he would be shocked that we were selling merchandise and we were in the fashion industry, because I'm maybe not the most fashionable guy. Yeah. But I think he'd be super proud that we took an idea that we had when we were that age and used it to start a business, which was always kind of our dream when I was that age. So I think you would be proud.
Yeah. And to know that you're 6 years in now mm-hmm. from, you know, really deciding to build this with your co-founders and now have donated, how many toques have you donated so far?
Yeah, we've donated over 26,000 items. That's including toques, mittens, and socks.
Wow.
And we're hoping by the end of this year to hit 35,000. That's kind of been our goal since day one. Mm-hmm. There's over 35,000 Canadians on any given night who are experiencing homelessness. So it was a number that was just like rattling around in our brains since we were starting. And it was something that we want to hit on a yearly basis, or like donate as much as we can. But mm-hmm. It would be a cool milestone to hit that after years of just trying to get people aware of how real the problem is and how necessary the items we're donating really are.
Yeah, that's amazing. So if you would like to help Toques from the Heart reach that 35,000, you know, milestone this year, get a toque. Toques from the Heart. I mean, we might as well do a plug now. Man. Hashtag ad. where can people go and decide to like purchase a toque right now? So, or any of your other products that someone might need or want, and so that someone else that might be experiencing homelessness can have one.
Yeah, so if you go to toquesfromtheheart.ca, we have our entire lineup there. Mm-hmm. We have our toque collections that go from our most basic, which is just our classic toque, all the way up to the sustainable one that I was mentioning earlier in the podcast. We also sell mittens and socks, because those three items are the most requested ones we get in the wintertime from mm-hmm. our shelter partners. And any one you purchase, we promise that in 2 weeks from then, we'll connect with a shelter, make sure those donations get to somebody in need, that even in this fall time right now, transitioning into winter, the need's at an all-time high, and they're always people are coming in every single day in need of these essential items.
Yeah.
So we're really trying to help those partners achieve those goals and help just keep Canadians warm, one toque, one item, and one mitten at a time.
Yeah. We love that. I will certainly be purchasing a toque this winter. Hopefully it fits on my head, but it fits on my head when I have straight hair. So yeah, we know that's going to work.
Yeah.
I really, you know, I found out about your business a very long time ago, and I always, you know, sort of wanted to have you on the podcast because, you know, building something like this that's so like heart-centered, I think is so wildly important to us as entrepreneurs, because it's when we solve a problem and we're giving back at the same time, it caters to both like that ambitious side of yeah. us and also that very caring human side of us. And so businesses like this that's so directly tied to, you know, the good and the business is so fantastic to me.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And it was a story I always love telling people. Mm-hmm. I'm proud to say what I do for a living, and every day I get to wake up and just think, like, how can we grow this and how can we innovate to just further help people across the country? So it's definitely a privilege that I don't take lightly to be in this position.
Yeah. How is it, you know, being an entrepreneur at such a young age? Like, how do you get people to take you seriously?
Well, it's funny because at the start, I think we got away with a lot of, like any like innocent mistakes that we were making when it came to like maybe not ordering enough stuff or stuff wasn't getting shipped on time, whatever, at the start, because we were just young kids working it all out. Mm-hmm. But I think now that we've been in it for a while, and I can't really think of a time when I wasn't doing this as my full-time occupation or thinking about working on it. So I don't think of myself as super young in the space, mm-hmm. but it definitely, we definitely get reminded about it a lot when we go into other spaces like sales events. So if we're at like a in-person show and we're surrounded by people who are like significantly older than we are, and we're like, we kind of feel a little bit out of place being like in the position where we are this time. So it's a little bit of a feeling about like we have something to prove, like we do belong in those spaces, and we have a product and we have a vision that does make sense, and it is a viable business.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it just comes from the proof of concept just kind of speaking for itself and the impact that we're able to have. But mm-hmm. people have to kind of get past that, especially a couple of years ago, like the baby face at the time, and take us seriously, hear our story, and know that it's a legitimate operation, and we're really trying to help those in need.
Yeah. I mean, your numbers say it's a legitimate operation, you know? So it's great that even though you are in those spaces that might make you feel like, ooh, you might not belong, you're too young for this space, you don't have enough experience. 6 years is a lot of experience.
Yeah.
Like six years is a heck of a lot of experience, because I think they say to be an expert in anything, you need to put about 10,000 hours into it. Well, you've multiplied that multiple times. Yeah. So you're an expert. So anybody else that questions you, be like, excuse me.
I'm the toot guy. Like,
I'm the toot guy.
Yeah.
It's why I ask that question is because for this podcast, it's really about how do you build two things at once. And when you're growing up, you're in university, you're starting a business, people like your parents have expectations of you to go and get a career, you know. Did you ever feel any like opposition in terms of like, should I be doing Tukes from the Heart or should I get a real, you know, quote unquote career?
Yeah. And I struggle with that a lot because we started the business while we were still in university. So we had that little bit of grace period of like, we're working on this little project, we'll see what kind of happens. And then transitioning away from that was definitely scary to try to do it full time and to make that a priority when all of my other friends were getting regular traditional jobs. And it was definitely scary to even have just conversations with them, hearing about their security and how they were just going to work, doing the same thing every single day. And it was that's what they were doing. It was very secure for them. And there's me thinking like if we don't get this order in or if this deal doesn't go through, like we're not going to be able to pay ourselves for this little bit. So it was definitely scary, but my parents were always supportive of me trying to do this. Like, they saw the vision, they saw what we were able to do and the impact, and they believe in me because I believe in it. So that was always really nice to have like at least their support there. Yeah. And it's definitely something scary though. It's like exactly like you said, like the expectations go get a traditional job, but I think this is going to be my path going forward. So I'm going to stick with this until the wheels fell off.
I love it. That's the commitment. Mm-hmm. We all make as entrepreneurs, even when it gets super scary. And I think on the others, it's interesting because there's this, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side, where your friends who have these like stable, traditional careers might be like, oh my God, Matt's doing so great. He has so much more freedom. But, you know, everyone's sort of like, oh, I wish I had a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Yeah.
What do you think is the biggest trade-off you've made choosing to be an entrepreneur?
I think especially right now, because me and my girlfriend are saving up to buy a house. Mm-hmm. And like the business is so like sporadic in terms of like how things are going to go during the year. A lot of it's out of our hands in terms of like who reaches out to us, what kind of deals can we get done throughout the year. So I think compared to where I could have been if I went the traditional route, I probably would have been a little bit more set up to be able to move out and have all these things happen on a more timely schedule. Mm-hmm. But it was the trade-off I was willing to make because I believed in the process. And I knew if I, the more hours I put into this, had a more chance of being able to have more exponential growth down the line than a traditional linear job I could have got out of school. Yeah. So I sacrificed definitely a good deal of like secured money I could have had going right out of school mm-hmm. for that like long-term growth that we're hopefully going to be experiencing in the next little bit.
Yeah, that you will experience in the next little bit.
I like that.
Yeah. It's going to happen, yeah. You know? I think that's super important because like myself, I love being an entrepreneur. Yeah. I did have a corporate career mm-hmm. at one time and, you know, that was good while it lasted. Yeah. But once I experienced entrepreneurship with all of its risk yeah. and, you know, a massive change in lifestyle, mm-hmm. It's totally worth it. So I can understand how you're investing now for that future success that you know will come, whether through this business or even through something additional that yeah. you might do. Because when you're an entrepreneur, you're always looking for opportunities, or not necessarily looking for opportunities, but you always see opportunities, yeah. right? The right one just has to strike you in the right way, just yeah. like, you know, coming full circle for you, the hockey socks turning into toques.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're definitely in that phase where, in the past and years when we were working on it, like, it's so hard to get people interested and like excited about winter gear in the summertime, mm-hmm. but we've gotten a lot better over the years of just getting people's ideas and their mindsets ready to just be ready for us when we're trying to get like all of our product out in the next little bit. So yeah. we're having a lot more success, at least on that part this year than we've ever had in the past. So mm-hmm. I'm excited about that. And hopefully it translates to, the dream setup that I was talking about. And I was kind of dreaming about when I did make those sacrifices early on. So
yeah.
super excited for how this year's going to go. And hopefully we can donate a whole bunch of stuff and get a couple steps closer for some personal goals as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. So when we wrap up this podcast, it's really about a reflection of yourself and the business. What's the one thing that you would love to leave behind in your entrepreneurial journey so far?
I think if anybody were to think about my journey or myself reflecting on it one day when I'm a little bit older, maybe not doing the same thing I'm doing now, I would love to leave behind a legacy of giving. That's been the things that we started since we first the business came to be an inception. Like, we wanted to create something that was going to give back, and we were able to do that on a small scale and then grow that up to giving Canada wide. Mm-hmm. So I think whenever, if this thing kind of wraps up on its own or I transition to something else one day, I hope we are able to leave behind a lasting legacy of giving and compassion and give people an idea of like their little acts during the day and simple decisions that they can make. Like, what item of clothing should I buy? Should I buy this one that supports a cause, or should I buy this one that doesn't? And they make those conscious decisions to mm-hmm. participate in a giving goal just like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really great answer. That's a really great answer.
Thank you.
Our second one is, what's the biggest lesson you've learned so far?
I think a couple, one of them, I think, which everybody has to get used to if they're in this space, is don't count the chickens before they fly the coop. How as corny as that sounds, we have gotten wrapped up in like some exciting or hype things every once in a while that like sounds so good on paper, or somebody's selling you a dream that would help you out, get to the next stage or whatever the case may be. And I think we've gotten really good at kind of tampering our expectations a little bit so that we're prepared for either situation. But at the start, when we heard like, if a company wanted to work with us to buy some stuff for their employees, that's like a core part of our business now. Mm-hmm. And when we were first starting that, people would kind of give us a really exciting idea in a conversations where they'd give us these quotes and talk like, oh, like we want to do all these things with you guys. And then if those things never came to fruition, it was heartbreaking at the time. It still is, but we're definitely trying to like, again, be more understanding of those circumstances and just like just be more practical about every big piece of news that you kind of come in through the business. So just be more realistic and more grounded so you don't get caught up in the hype.
Mm-hmm. That's a big one. Mm-hmm. That's a really big one. I've actually had to learn to do that myself too. I think that's the biggest thing I've learned. Because as entrepreneurs, you go through so many lulls sometimes, right? And your business is very, very seasonal at this point in time.
Yeah.
So it's like a big wave. All these things are building up, building up, building up. And then spring comes and then you go right down to like basically zero activity. So being excited about those are really, really hard, especially when you have such a short time to make such a big impact.
Exactly. You nailed it on the head there. And the timeline aspect of it is 100% like another big factor that makes those any conversation we have at the time so vital to get from conversation to close.
Mm-hmm.
So, we definitely learned the importance of time management too as well, and making sure if we have any kinds of conversations, we're trying to beeline it as fast as we can because our timeline in the wintertime is pretty limited.
Yeah. And our final question is, what's one thing you're taking into the future with you?
I think the one thing I think I would take into the future with me, whether I'm working on this or doing something else, is just, I think that pride of like we were talking about earlier of like fulfilling that childhood dream. I am so proud of myself and proud of what we were able to achieve and just being able to say that I tried it and I've done it and carry that mindset forward to whatever I'm doing in the future, whether it's improving this business or working on something else.
I
think the idea of just being proactive with yourself and being having the idea to push something forward that you never thought maybe would do anything one day and just backing yourself in those situations. So just that bit of self-confidence to believe in yourself.
Yeah. I really like that. And I know that I said that was my last question, but how do you think you have built confidence throughout this journey so far?
I think the biggest way we built confidence was just having conversations with people and telling them our vision, telling them about the brand, telling them about what we want to achieve one day. And hearing them like kind of resonate with it and understand what we're doing and see the vision. That was, I think, the biggest confidence boosting bit. Cause it's like that mini pitch that I was talking about back in the day when I was watching Dragon's Den, when they got that bit of reassurance of like, your idea makes sense. The concept is real. You just need to go out there and do it. That was, I think, the biggest building block for us kind of when we were starting off. And even now, and when anybody says, hey, that's a great idea, we'd love to work with you, that is the reassurance that we always need just to kind of keep moving, keep going, and keep trying to grow this business.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thank you so much, Matt,
You're
for being here today. I absolutely love your story, and I hope everyone, you know, who's tuning in, who's listening, visits Tukes from the Heart. It's in the description below. Find it, click on it, and purchase something for yourself or a family member. The holidays are coming around, and this is definitely a gift that's going to keep on giving to the next. And you will see me with a toque before the end of this winter.
Sounds perfect. Thank you so much for having me, and it was a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, it was an absolute pleasure, Matt. Take care. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We're so glad to have you as part of our Buzzworthy community as we grow our network of buzzworthy businesses. Continue to follow us on all the social media platforms at buzzworthy_pod and follow us on whatever platform you're listening to so that you can get the new episodes as soon as they're out. This Buzzworthy podcast could not be done without our incredible team, starting with our music by Khaled Imam, our video and sound engineer, James Clark, Yvette Robichaud, our social media manager, Cesar Cardenia, our brand and creative lead, and finally, your host and executive producer, Shalacy Harris. We'll see you next week.